Quick math, beauties. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything just costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, access from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, so do the math and see how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Jillian. That's netsuite.com/Jillian. netsuite.com/Jillian.
When you need to refuel between meetings or running errands, or you just want a healthy snack that squashes your hunger, Wonderful Pistachios, which come in a variety of flavors and sizes, by the way, are the perfect choice to fill you up and keep you going throughout the day. Wonderful Pistachios is also a good source of protein and a zero guilt snack. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, guys, which gives you over 10% of your daily value. And with flavors like salt and pepper, sweet chili, and seasoned salt in the shelled variety, options like chili roasted, sea salt, and vinegar or jalapeno lime in the no shell variety, you're sure to please your taste buds while snacking healthy. So check out WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more about how these little green wonders can power up your day.
We're like getting ready to launch a rocket. Houston, how are you? Who's ready? I'm ready when you are.
I've never seen you look so busy. You got a lot of stuff going on over there.
I got a lot to talk about. I do.
No, you look very, I've never seen you quite so efficient looking.
Oh.
With the computer and the things and
yeah,
papers.
I'm ready to go to work.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Well, we got to take this seriously now because we won an award.
Yeah. Yeah. And how did I find out that we won the award? You wrote to me and you said, hey, look, we won this award. Now start friggin' tweeting.
I didn't say friggin'.
I know you didn't, but I'm trying to be kind.
I use the F word.
No.
Yeah, and
you're
I meant it.
I know. You said, look at, we won. And I went, and I was full of joy. And then I saw the rest of it. Now start.
Yeah. F-ing tweeting. That's right, dude.
And that wasn't even like, love Jillian or
no,
anything.
It was no just XOs. Like, it was just... No hey, buddy. No hey, Poogie.
No,
hey,
there
Peanut.
Was, there was no hey, buddy either. It was just like, hey. Look, we won this award.
You better start tweeting. You slacker.
Oh, God, yeah. It made me laugh. Well, congratulations. To you.
Congratulations to you.
No, I think that's great. And I always knew that
this we're geniuses. Brilliant talents, aren't we, son of Bruce Paul? And congratulations to you, Jake. Huh?
Well, thank you.
Let's all break our arms patting ourselves on the back. But we should clarify. So iTunes... said our little show here was the best new podcast of 2011. So we're super prideful and boastful mm-hmm. and arrogant about it right now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I sent Janice this email, right? And I was like, hey, jackass, we won this thing and you should tweet because everybody's like thinking we made a big stink out of it and you're still not tweeting.
I tweeted the one time, though, about the fart on the show, on the doctors.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
anyway,
and that was good. And yeah. I liked it. But I feel like, you know, now that you have kind of thrown that out there, mm-hmm. it's like a little teaser. Okay. You need to follow it up.
Okay.
And I thought that we would talk about fear today, Janice. I thought we'd talk about managing fear because you're clearly afraid.
Yes, I am.
To engage.
I am. You're right. And you know what? We've been getting a lot of email about fear holding back in every aspect.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. In every aspect of life, not just diet and fitness, but every aspect.
Oh, okay. Well, here's another thing that made me want to talk about this. So if you listen to the podcast over the last several weeks, I went on a snowboarding trip over Thanksgiving. And You can't start wheezing already.
Sorry, I haven't heard this story yet, so I'm quite...
No, it's not funny. It's like a serious...
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's got gravitas.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
How'd you like that word?
And I'm impressed on a lot of levels right now.
Well, I feel like we need to really step up our game here, okay. Especially with the vernacular.
Okay.
Since we are the best new podcast
of 2011.
We should sound smart.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I'm on the slopes, mm-hmm. And I gotta tell you, I'm not a good, I can't ski at all. I did not grow up in the snow, but I was a skater and I surfed a little bit. And so snowboarding is going to be the thing that I gravitate more towards, mm-hmm. as opposed to skiing. So I take a few lessons and I mean, you're on this board and your feet are strapped to it and it was kind of warm out. So the conditions were icy, mm-hmm. and this thing is sliding down a mountain. I cannot even tell you. And I was terrified because, you know, what you have to do is point the nose of the snowboard down the mountain. And then you can turn, and it's called a toe side turn, where you turn and you face the mountain, and then a heel side turn, where you turn the other way and you face down the mountain. But in order to make these turns and to traverse down the mountain, you have to put the nose of the board face down towards the bottom of the mountain. And when you do, the board picks up a tremendous amount of speed, obviously, because it's pointing straight down. It's going to bomb down towards the mountain. And my natural inclination, it was so terrifying for me that my natural inclination was to lean back over my back leg. But what happens when you do that is that the board flies out from underneath you because you're leaning backwards and you're literally throwing the board out in front and you fall back and break something. Or sustain some sort of unfun injury. So I fell on my butt, and oh my gosh, that was humiliating, by the way. And it's not snow. I'm convinced it's like asphalt, because you don't just fall to the ground. It's like God comes out of heaven and slams you to the ground. It's like, wham! I mean, it is unbelievable. So I take a fall on my butt, and literally my instructor comes up to me. She's like, "You good? You ready to go?" And I was like, "I need a minute," because, you know, the wind's knocked out of me. I get back up, and now I have fear. I was already scared, but now I'm really scared because that hurt. And the more that I avoided pointing the nose towards the bottom of the mountain and putting my weight on my front leg and leaning into the board, the more I would fall. And she said to me, "You have to commit to this, Jillian. You've got to commit to this or you're going to keep getting hurt. And you have to lean into it, because when you hesitate and you lean back, you fall." And I thought, okay, oh my gosh, all right. And I really had to psych myself up, because these were not small hills. And my idiot brother is bombing down the mountain at 22 with no fear, because he's dumb. He's a 22-year-old. That's how they are. And I'm watching him literally explode. Like, I'm watching the board go over here and his hat go over there and the goggles were over there. And he gets back up and he gets back on. And I was like, all right, if he can do this, I can do this. So I take a deep breath and I point the nose towards the bottom of the mountain. And if you turn too soon, I got scared and I tried to turn too soon without having that nose fully straightened. And I wiped out again. And she's like, "You have to be patient. You have to turn the nose all the way down. You've got to be patient, and then you can start making your turn." So I get back up again. And not only do you need to be brave enough now, right, to point the nose down towards the bottom, to lean into it, but you have to wait a couple of seconds for the board to get fully straight. And by the way, in those few seconds, it's picking up tremendous momentum. So she's like, I turn the board now and I hear her go, "Be patient, be brave, be patient." And I'm waiting for the board to straighten out. She goes, "Okay, now turn." And I turned the board. And then she goes, "Okay, point the nose down the hill again and make a heel side turn." And I took a deep breath, pointed the nose, leaned on my leg. And guess what? When I pointed the nose down the mountain and I leaned forward into it, it was picking up tremendous speed, but I could control the board. And when I turned at the right time, I was able to effectively turn the board. And so it required so much faith, so much commitment, and so much patience. And I remember thinking to myself, this is such an incredible analogy for life, because you need all those things to be successful in any endeavor, especially one that terrifies you. And I've got to tell you, I was really scared. I mean, it was incredibly icy. It was a really steep angle. The conditions were bad. There were moguls everywhere. Mm-hmm. They were not great conditions. And I am a very new snowboarder. And of course, I refused to go on the bunny slopes for long. And she said, I was on the green slopes for a little while. And then my instructor was like, you're ready to do the blue. And I was ready. But I had to essentially commit, lean into it, be patient, and wait for the opportunity to turn the board. And so I thought, on that note, we should look at a few different ways that you can put those skills into practice and manage your fear in various aspects of your life. Because here's the other irony about fear. The more afraid you are, and the more your fear affects your behavior, the more you are bound and determined to create the thing you fear. So, for example, I'm afraid of falling, so I don't turn the nose down. I don't wait for the time to turn. I don't put my foot and my weight over the front of the board. And of course, I'm afraid of falling and I do it wrong and I fall. We always create the thing we fear most because we don't commit. We don't educate ourselves on what to do to set ourselves best up for success. And we're not patient enough to sit in that uncomfortable place to ride it out so that we can be successful. Think about it this way. A relationship that you have. You're afraid this person's going to leave you, or you're insecure within the dynamic. So you call them all the time. Mm-hmm. What are you doing? What are you doing? Where are you going? What's going on? Are you talking to someone else? Are you seeing somebody else? We get neurotic and we get obsessive and we get controlling. And what's the first thing they do? They start distancing us because we're annoying the hell out of them. And we end up creating the scenario that we fear the most. Every time, I guarantee you, I could come up with a million more analogies, but the reality is that when you let your fear control your behavior and you hesitate and you don't commit, you're going to end up creating that very thing that you fear the most. And I think maybe the good news in that is that you'll have to face down that fear and you'll realize that you can live through it. But the reality is sometimes it sucks. I didn't want to fall back down on that mountain again. I don't want to have more failures that are unnecessary. I don't want to make the same mistakes again. So one of the first things that you can best do when it comes to managing your fear, no matter what it might be, whether it's your relationship or professionally speaking or engaging in a healthier life, whatever it might be, educate yourself about the task at hand, the thing you want to achieve, whether it's snowboarding or whether it's asking somebody out, or whether it's starting a family, or whether it's who knows. You know, I'll say with snowboarding, I got an instructor. I got the information. She prepared me on how best to be successful. Staring down the face of parenthood, I've been reading a tremendous amount of books so that at least I feel somewhat prepared come what may. And that will really help you manage that anxiety of the unknown, because theoretically, you will have information and a game plan for when that scenario unfolds or goes down. So getting informed and educating yourself before engaging and committing is key. If you point that nose down the mountain and you lean into it without knowing when to turn, how to turn, where to turn, you're going to wipe out. Same exact thing, exact same, just an analogy for everything else. Now, another thing I want you to do when it comes to your fear is think about all of the things that you're good at, all of the times in your life you've been successful, all of the times in your life that you've excelled, all the places where you feel strong. And by the way, it could just be one thing that you're great at. You don't need to make a list of like 100 things. It could just be, I'm a great motorcycle rider. I am great at jumping horses. I am a fantastic negotiator. I don't know, whatever it is. Write it down. We all have at least one area of our lives that's our comfort zone. Like Janice, you know that you're a great radio producer. You do. You're afraid of tweeting. You will not date. You go through all this crap. But here, you're like, I'm good at this. This is what I do. I've been doing this for years. This is where I excel. True?
I do feel confident. Yeah, I do. You're right. I do.
Right.
I do.
You have zero fear. You're like, I got this. And this is that space for you. We all have that. We all have that thing. So before you embark on the thing that's going to scare you, really stop and marinate in that feeling and that headspace where you feel you're most strong, you're most powerful. So for me, when I was on that mountain, I was thinking to myself, okay, you know, I've raced around the track on the back of Randy Mamola's motorcycle at 175 miles an hour. I've been in the back of Mario Andretti's car going 215 miles an hour. I've jumped off buildings. I've swam with great white sharks. Like, I got this. If I fall down, I'll get back up. I'm not going to die. I'm going to get back up. I'm going to be okay. I'll be able to handle this. Like, I went to that place in my head where I dug up those feelings of being brave and being successful. And it allowed me to point that nose down the mountain and commit, because I went to that stronger place. And even when it's something else in business, I'll think, well, I took risks here, here, and here, and I was successful. Now, conversely, I also go back to places where I failed, okay? And I think to myself, wow, I fell down here and it really hurt, but I got back up and I healed and I was okay. Or I had this failure and that failure, but I got back up, I learned from it, and I used the knowledge that I learned to propel me towards success in my next endeavor. And it helped me manage the fear, because I realized that even if I failed, even if it didn't go my way, I'd had other experiences before where I wasn't successful and I'd lived to tell. And in addition, I knew that there would be an opportunity in the setback if it happened to go wrong. There would be a lesson there, a lesson that I could employ at a later date to be better in another situation or scenario. And that's a really great way to manage fear, because a lot of times our fear is really just about failing, getting rejected in the relationship, failing at the business, not being able to handle a situation, failing on the mountain and getting hurt. That's really what it's about. So now I want you to think about one of the things I used to say to my contestants, because they would be so scared on The Biggest Loser, so scared of losing the weight and opening up and sharing, you know, their stories and the things that were holding them back. And I would say, listen, you've already been to hell and back. You had these things happen in your childhood. You had this thing, you declared bankruptcy. Your wife left you, this, that, the other. And guess what? You're still here. You're still standing. Like, it's only uphill from this point. So you go back to those failures and you think about how you survived them. And then you think about what you could learn from them. And if this doesn't go right, what you can learn from it. So you embrace the opportunity of a failure, because failure or fear is how we learn when we confront it appropriately. That's how we grow better. You don't just bomb down the mountain and think, wow, I'm so good at this. Had I been so naturally good at snowboarding, I wouldn't have had that epiphany about commitment, patience, faith in my abilities. It was really, in a fascinating way, I was made a note to myself. I really want to share this with you guys. And I, hence my preparation today. I've been sitting on this story for a couple of weeks now, Janice.
No, but you know what it brings up for me is there's a very strange and bizarre comfort in failure.
Yeah.
You know, and ultimately you're talking about change. You had to change. You totally, on that slope, you had to make a decision to change.
To be brave.
Yeah, yeah.
If I wanted to snowboard, though. And it's like, okay, do you want to quit? Do you want to just stop? Do you want to go to après-ski and get a cocktail and just call it a day? By the fire?
Which you could have.
I could have done.
Yeah. And probably enjoyed that, but with regret.
Absolutely.
Yeah, with regret.
It has to be worth it, of course. I want to be really clear that there's a big difference, and I've said this several times, but I'll say it again for those of you who haven't heard my words of wisdom on the topic. There's a big difference between confronting fear and a stupid stunt. So, okay, Bob and I were in New Zealand, and we both didn't want to bungee jump.
Right.
And he felt like crap about it. He was so upset, and I said, you know, honey, is jumping off this building going to change your life? Is it going to enhance your life? Is it impeding your ability to live better And he said, no. And I said, well, what are you afraid of? He's like, I'm afraid I'm going to snap my spine. I'm afraid I'm going to pull a muscle. I'm afraid I'm going to blow a blood vessel in my eye. I'm afraid I'm going to bruise my brain. Like, he listed all these things. And you know, I was like, okay, well, then wouldn't that make this a stupid stunt? And he said yes, and we were able to move forward. But for me, I wanted to snowboard. Mm-hmm. I liked it. I wanted to do it with my friends. I thought it was a great outdoor sport. It's something that I wanted to do. I thought it would improve my life. Any job risk I take, I think it, if it goes well, it will improve my life. Making myself more vulnerable in my personal relationships, well, that's going to enhance the quality of my life. So that's a fear that I have to face down. Now, a couple more really simple techniques that I want you to try, and this always works for me. I think about people who've achieved the thing that I want to achieve. So I'll go back through and look at people who've taken those risks or who put themselves out there and who may have failed but ultimately became successful, or, you know, whatever their journey might be, I vicariously live that journey through them. I take that journey with them. I read their story. I read their comments about it. I experience that journey emotionally through the story that they've told about them facing their fear, failing, coming back and conquering their fear. In a very strange way, we take this vicarious journey and it helps us with our fear because we know that it's going to be okay. We feel like if someone else can do it, we can do it too. And it's almost like you look at Olympic athletes and you notice how they're always besting each other's records. Mm-hmm. Well, one goes, well, holy cow, if he can do that and if he can run this in X amount of time, it's humanly possible, then I can do it. I could probably do it too. We look at other people's experiences. That's what Biggest Loser was all about. It was all about people watching the show and going, wow, if they can do it, so can I. So look at the thing you're afraid of and study a person who's great at it, somebody who overcame it, somebody who did it. Read their stories, take that journey, and it really helps you believe in the possibility and buy into that journey.
That's why peer-based recovery is so successful.
Is that so?
Yeah, because it's your peer. You're seeing what, if they did it, I can do it. Look at their story. Oh my God, if they did it, I can do it. So when you're with a peer,
yeah,
it's very successful.
I gotta say, the message boards on my website, jillianmichaels.com, they are, you know, the information, there's workouts and there's recipes and there's menus and, you know, all that stuff is there. But the thing I find the most special about the site are the message boards. And
exactly.
That's why, I guess.
And you've often talked about that. The people on your message boards rock your world because you see them.
Yeah.
You see them. You see this network supporting each other.
So
it's
true.
Amazing.
Yeah. That's, wow. All right. Well, then that should be our next tip, is build that support system of people that are going through it with you, or, you know, it comes from whether it's business, start with networking, yep, whether it's relationships, you know, get a couple of single friends and go out together and troll the bars, huh, Janice?
Oh, God. I knew it. I could see it in your eyes. I could see, oh, she's going to zing me. I could
Jake,
just,
let's take Janice out to troll the bars.
Oh, my God.
Excuse me. How
are
you?
We have to take a...
My name is Janice. Hola. You know, we recently won an award. And what do you do?
Hey, do we get like a trophy or something?
You know what? Call me later. I'll tweet you.
I can't get you off this. Oh, my God. You know, I just...
You know what we should do next for Janice is a dating challenge.
Don't.
That's genius.
The Twitter dating challenge.
Yes!
You know,
huh?
We were doing so well. We were doing so well, and I knew you couldn't hold it. As soon as you went about the thing, I could see the twinkle in your eye, and I could see you were going to start digressing into some sorted way to help Janice. So let's just take a break, because that was a wonderful segment, and let's not ruin it now with me, okay?
Well, it was a wonderful segment because we are award-winning podcasters.
Oh, would you take a break?
Oh, all right, I'll take a break.
Okay.
Make no mistake, I don't do anything for free. I keep my enemies closer than my mirror ever gets to me. And if you think that there is shelter in this attitude, where do you feel the warmth of my gratitude?
Okay, so since we are an award-winning podcast, mm-hmm, we have to make sure that our information is up to snuff. You know, we need to be really giving out very useful information. So I thought, we should maybe talk about fitness again. Okay. Every now and again, I think maybe we should go back to the old wheelhouse there.
You're so funny. It's like you feel funny to talk about fitness. You're like, I guess we should.
We could do, yeah. Well, I think that we talk about things that are so profound and deep. And then the fitness, you know, but it's, you know what it is? Because fitness for me has always been one tool that I utilize to help me help someone else build their life. So it's just it's a piece of the puzzle, but it's not the enchilada for me, the whole enchilada.
No,
but it's really, it's very important that we talk about this. So here we go. I thought we would talk about things that we can do to have a better workout.
Sure. Okay.
Right? So the first one, let's talk about caffeine. Caffeine, there's a lot of conflicting information out there, okay? Here's the bottom line with it. Certain people will tell you, oh, it can stress you out. Oh, it dehydrates you. It raises your blood pressure. It's acidic in your body, blah, blah, blah. Like anything that you abuse, if you abuse something, if you abuse vitamin C, you'll be sick to your stomach. If you abuse vitamin A, you'll get liver damage. With anything, if you do too much of anything, it's going to be bad for you. With caffeine, if you limit your dose to 400 milligrams a day, that's the top amount you should be taking in. That is two large cups of coffee, okay? If you limit yourself and make that your maximum dose, 400 milligrams, you're going to reap the benefits of caffeine without a lot of those bad side effects. Now, if you do have high blood pressure, obviously this is a conversation you need to have with your doctor. But what caffeine can do is not only does it improve your cognitive function, and there are even some studies that suggest it can help fight certain cancers like pancreatic cancer. When it comes to your workout, if you take caffeine and you only need about 160 milligrams of caffeine, which isn't a small dose, but a little less than a tall coffee at your favorite coffee shop, or you could even take it. I take it in an energy shot, or I've taken it in a fat burner. As long as it's a clean form of caffeine, 160 milligrams of caffeine about 45 minutes before you work out can not only delay your fatigue, enhance your endurance, it also reduces the muscle pain that you're feeling. So it allows you to get a stronger, deeper contraction, because you're less susceptible to, oh, I want to die. Oh, my God, this is so miserable. Oh, my God, the pain. It actually helps to reduce your muscle pain during exercise. It keeps you more alert. It mobilizes your fat stores. And it does this because it slows down the breakdown of muscle glycogen, which is essentially sugar that's stored in your muscles. And what that helps you do is burn a higher percentage of fat calories when you're training versus glycogen. So caffeine, you're going to work out harder, you're going to work out longer, you're going to work out faster, and it makes you burn more fat than stored sugar. There's one.
Okay.
All right. Remember, 160 milligrams, about 45 minutes before you work out. Of course, talk to your doctor, make sure that you're allowed to have caffeine. Next one, don't work out on an empty stomach. Make sure that you eat a little something, once again, about 45 minutes to an hour before you train. Now, let's say sometimes I get up and I have breakfast at 8 in the morning and I work out at 10. That's okay too. As long as you've got a little bit of blood sugar going, you've got a little bit of food in your stomach. The idea here is not to eat and consume a large meal and then go exercise, because that's actually counterproductive. We eat a large meal and then our body goes into that rest and digest phase. You don't want to do that. You want to eat a little bit of carbs, a little bit of protein. About an hour before you work out, could be 2 hours before you work out. But the whole idea here is that you have available blood sugar, so you don't, quote, bonk or hit the wall. Because when you're starving and you hit the gym, you're not going to be able to work out hard. You're not going to be able to work out a long time. And your body is looking for available sugar, right? It's not always going to burn fat calories. It needs a little bit of blood sugar as well. If you don't have that available, your body is going to be more prone to cannibalizing your own muscle, to eating your own muscle tissue, because you can convert your own muscle into fuel. Whereas fat never gets converted back into blood sugar or glycogen. It doesn't go back to glucose or glycogen. Fat gets burned as fat. Now, sugar that you don't use, blood sugar that doesn't get utilized, gets stored as glycogen, and that doesn't get burned gets stored as fat. But the reality is, when you eat a little something, There's that myth of, oh, if I work on an empty stomach, I'll burn more fat. You won't. You'll lose more muscle tissue and you'll have a weaker, less powerful, less intense workout. And remember, the harder you work out when you're doing it, the more calories you're burning while you're at it, the more benefit you're having to building that lean muscle, and you get what's called a continuous burn or an afterburn. Exercise post-oxygen consumption is another fancy term. The harder you train, the more intensely and the longer you train, the more elevated your metabolic rate will be long after your training session is over.
That buzz.
Yeah, exactly. Buzz. Get that metabolism humming. So eat a little something. Here's one that you might not have thought was coming. Don't stretch before you work out. We've talked about this a lot on the show, but you want to warm up with cardio. And what that does is we're literally oxygenating the blood. We're heating up. You're literally elevating your body temperature. You're heating up the body, heating up the muscles so they're more elastic, more flexible. But stretching has been shown to actually make your workout weaker and slower. And this is because what happens is when you say reach down to touch your toes, your muscles will actually become tighter as opposed to relaxing because your muscles are protecting you from overstretching. So they've done tons and tons of studies. And here's one that I'll quote for you. So the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention combed through more than 100 papers looking at stretching studies. They found people who stretched before exercise were no less likely to suffer injuries such as a pulled muscle. In addition, they found that their workouts were slower and weaker. Their muscle contraction was weaker. So no. You stretch after you work out if you're going to static stretch. You can do what's called dynamic stretching before a workout, which really just means that you're moving your body. So you're going through a greater range of motion, hip circles, knee circles, right. Arm circles. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Things that take you through your range of motion that you'll be doing during your workout, but through movement, not static stretching.
So, like the swimmers do before they compete.
Look at you. Mm-hmm. Senorita knowledge over there.
Well, I love watching the swimmers get ready before a meet. They do all that stuff.
Bet you do. I bet that's what you're watching. Moving swiftly onward. Hydration.
What's wrong with you?
Oh, I know what you're about. I got your number. Oh, Hydration. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, obviously a lot of different functions in the body. Janice, get your head out of the gutter.
I know. I'm ready.
A lot of different functions in the body require proper hydration. Okay. Not just exercise. But hydration is a little bit more complicated than making sure you're drinking enough water. Hydration involves having the correct ratio of fluids to electrolytes, all right? Now, electrolytes are chemicals like calcium, sodium, potassium, and they're involved in all of our bodily functions, most of them anyway, from muscle contraction to thinking clearly, thinking properly. So guess what? I'm going to make this real simple for you. You don't need these fancy energy drinks. Guess where you can find a really good source of electrolytes? Tap water. Tap water. Yeah. And by the way, I don't know if we've ever done a segment on this. I think we have. In many cases, tap water is very highly regulated. Tap water is checked like every 14 minutes. Bottled water isn't regulated at all. And in a lot of cases, watch a documentary. It's called Tap Flow. Flow Tapped. It'll talk to you all about the whole hype and scandal behind bottled water, how all the plastic is. It's a lot of it is just like a domestic source of water that they're not regulating and they're not staying on top of. You pay all this money for it and we have all that plastic and all that crap. Tap water. And you can go online and Google, like if you live in Los Angeles, I would say quality of Los Angeles tap water. And it will send you to a little website. I have the site in the back of Master Your Metabolism 2 and on JillianMichaels.com. But you can check the quality of your tap water. And make sure, of course, that it's, you know, well, some places have better water than others. New York has really good water, for example. But tap water, real simple, cheap. Get hydrated, drink tap water.
Is that an additive or is that just naturally in our tap water?
It's just naturally in most of our tap water.
Wow.
Well, again, remember, tap water is going to be different.
Yeah. But I mean,
everywhere you go.
Yeah.
And I do filter my water. I have a filter on the house that I use, but that's to remove the heavy metals.
Right. Yeah.
Lead and this and that and the other. So, like I said, you save yourself some money, hydrate, get your electrolytes in there. Another good recovery drink and something you can drink beforehand if you are first. This is not something you need to be thinking, gosh, am I getting enough sodium? Am I getting enough potassium? But coconut water, is loaded with potassium. So it's another one. It's got about 40 calories in one of those little coconut water cartons. So that's another good option. And last but not least, you need to really regulate your body temperature. So for those of you who might be doing hot yoga, or for those of you who are going outside in really hot weather and you think, oh, I need to sweat. Sweating, that's, you know, I'm burning a ton of calories. No, you're not. What you're doing is dehydrating the heck out of your system. You're, in fact, not burning more calories when your environment outside is hot. You're putting your body at risk of massive dehydration. You run the risk of stretching your ligaments or your muscles because you become, quote, hypermobile. But that's actually bad. You can, there's a reason you don't want to stretch your body beyond its biological limit. You can get injured. You can sustain. This is why I hate that Bikram yoga. Absolutely hate it. But not only that, our body has very little energy to waste. And the energy that we require to function properly in a heated environment is essentially going to fatigue us and drain us so that we're not having a powerful, strong, intense workout. And I just talked about how important it is to be, you know, lift as much as you can possibly lift with good form and to run as fast as you can. You want to work on those high intensity intervals, power, speed, agility, all of those things. You want to have that mental focus when you're working out in a hot environment. I mean, I took that one of those classes once. First of all, not only did I get nauseous, I thought I was going to pass out. I couldn't even get deep into the yoga positions because I didn't have the strength. So you think, oh, I'm sweating. Ugh. That does not mean you're burning more calories. What it means is your body either has a more efficient or a less efficient cooling system than somebody else, and you're rapidly dehydrating yourself. And I just said that hydration was really important for an intense workout. So stay in a climate-controlled environment, please. Either in your gym, in your home, if the weather's nice outside, excellent. But don't allow yourself to overheat externally. You want to generate heat internally. You want the intensity of your workout to elevate your core temperature from the inside out, not the outside in. Yeah, all right?
Stinky, skanky when people sweat their lycra. And, oh, God, just crotchety old stank. It's like smelling. It's disgusting. I don't like the hot yoga myself. It just stinks. It stinks in there. No. Yeah, helping as much as I can. It's horrible. Hot lycra on crotch is not pleasant.
You're in a free fall right now.
I know, I don't know how to dig. But you know what I mean? When it's like, okay, everybody, and open up your tree. It's like, wakalaka, holy Toledo, could we please leave? This is not natural. You shouldn't be that close, and especially in a very close environment. Were you finished?
I was done, yeah.
I was hoping you had a little bit more to help me out of this hole I've just dug myself in. I just don't believe you should be smelling at people that closely unless you're intimate with them. Now, let's see what shape are we in here. Yeah, we got to stop. We'll take some calls. Okay, don't stop looking at me like
that. You are wildly entertaining today.
You've been in that experience where you've thought, you know what, this, I don't need to be smelling these smells.
You're on your own with this.
Okay, Jake, let's turn the mics off and we'll get some calls. Finish this show off quickly. Okay, we're back, and Sherry is waiting for you.
Excellent. Sherry, how are you?
I'm great, Jillian. How are you doing?
I'm good, buddy. What's going on?
Oh, my gosh. I'm just honored to have the opportunity to talk with you today and get some questions answered.
Yeah. Talk to me.
Well, you accompany me quite frequently in my car rides around the state for my current job. I listen to you all the time, and so I've been really taking to heart the messages that you're sending about healthy, clean food and going organic. And recently, we don't have an organic store local to where I live, and so I stopped in a urban area and went into a store and thought I was going to take you up on some of the I guess, suggestions you've been giving. And I was completely overwhelmed. I didn't even know where to start. I guess my question is, what is the most important item to change first when it comes to going organic or whole food and making sure that I'm getting the right things, I guess.
Okay, buddy. Well, let's address a few things. First of all, I'm going to talk about weight, and then I'm going to talk about health.
All right.
Weight is just a simple matter of calories in, calories out. So no matter if you're eating incredibly healthy food or incredibly unhealthy food, like, you could eat organic nuts and cheeses and meats and what have you all day long and gain a ton of weight, and you could eat 1,200 calories of Twinkies and your weight would stay the same. Doesn't mean you'd be healthy. You'd be really sick. But the reality is, calories are units of energy. That's what they are. So food has calories in them. And when you eat too much of anything, whether it's good for you or bad for you, you're going to gain weight. So always be mindful of counting calories. You should have some general idea of how many you're burning in a day. And you can go on Google and look for an active metabolic rate calculator. And it will say, all right, you're burning roughly this much in a day, and you can add your exercise in, and then you count the calories of the food you're eating with an app or a pocket calorie counter. And you'll find that we often eat the same things over and over. I have like 3 breakfasts that I rotate every day. I have 5 dinner places that I eat at. I have, like, you know, my, what, Janice?
No, I just, you're a creature of habit in a way.
Aren't you?
Yeah.
Everybody is. Like,
aren't you kind of like,
yeah, totally.
Like, come on. What are you going to have for dinner when you get home? Or when you leave here?
Maybe porridge.
You're joking.
Porridge.
Well, do you see what I have to deal with, buddy? See what I have to deal with her? What do you mean you eat your porridge? What are you talking about?
Porridge. What's wrong with porridge?
Porridge? Porridge. Janice, I can't. I can't. First of all, it is a breakfast food, and no one eats porridge. They eat oatmeal. Don't eat porridge. Janice, just, I can't. I can't. This is just pathetic.
You know, Sherry, see,
Sherry, I'll use myself, because Janice is a terrible example of what you should do or shouldn't do. So
if she eats porridge every day, she is.
Dear Lord, porridge. So, okay, buddy. For example, Janice, you go sit in the corner. So, all right. I have like 5 places that I eat for dinner, right? And one of them, there's a Thai place, and I like these, fresh spring roll things with shrimp and veggies and rice noodles. They're not fried. Another place is a sushi place that I go to. Another place is a Brazilian place that I go to. And another place is an Italian place that I go to. And if I cook, there are 3 recipes from my cookbook that I make: the winter vegetable couscous, the pizza, and the vegetarian chili. Okay. That's what I do. I have the 3 things that I cook and the 5 places I go to dinner, and that's it. 4 places. And that's it. So I know how many calories are in those things. So once you have that information, like, it's a pain to go through it once or twice, but once you know it, you know it. So you're like, oh, I had the black bean chili. Okay. And I had 1.5 cups of it. That's 400 calories. Cause you know it. Cause you eat it again and again. Yeah. So now,
well, I think that was one of the things I learned listening to your podcast, is it doesn't matter which program I join or what I do. If I don't keep track of how many calories I'm taking in and what I'm doing to burn them, I'm not going to lose the weight.
You're exactly.
Yeah, you taught me that. I got that.
Exactly. So okay. So now,
20 years later.
Now we get into the quality of your food. Now, the reason this matters is because food should be your medicine. Nature has created all these incredible foods, right? Fruits and vegetables and whole grains and this and that. And these foods, well, they have micronutrients. They have vitamins and minerals. And you've seen things like superfoods. If you eat this, this, and this, it helps to fight cancer. If you eat this, this, and this, it helps to fight heart disease. You know, you've read that before.
Yep.
Now,
yep.
When you eat the wrong types of foods that are heavily processed with chemicals, not only is that food not a natural form of medicine, it is a form of poison. It goes into the body and it causes heart disease and it causes cancer and all of those things. So the reason that the quality of your food is important is because it will help you prevent chronic diseases. It will help you prevent aging. And in addition, it will speed up your metabolism, because when you're eating real food, you're able to produce or to essentially create the right biochemical environment for a healthy, revved up metabolism. But when you eat the wrong things, you release fat storing hormones. When you eat the right things, your body is functioning the way that it should. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Yes.
So let's talk about the things that we should try to change. The worst offenders when it comes to your meat, you don't need to eat meat that often. You really don't. So you can go online to like the Monterey Bay Aquarium and it will show you seafood that's sustainable, seafood that isn't high in mercury. So it's okay to have farmed shrimp, but like you don't want farmed salmon. So ocean caught salmon is good. Farmed shrimp is okay. There's farmed tilapia. That's okay. So if you go to that website, it'll say, look, these seafoods are healthier than these seafoods, and you can eat that in moderation. Fish isn't organic. That's the good news. And you could, because there's no hormones in fish, like you don't, there's no such thing as organic fish. There's farmed and not farmed. Some's okay farmed, some isn't. So we don't want farmed salmon. That's one thing that we don't ever want. But other than that, you're doing okay. And you want to stay away from those predatory fish, tuna once or twice a week at the most, just because of the mercury level. But so you know, that's a good place to start. With chicken, there are no hormones in chicken, but chicken are fed antibiotics. So with chicken, if you can't go organic, like I'm not over, you know, it's got saline and other kinds of preservatives and this and that in it. It's not ideal, but chicken is going to be less offensive than beef. When you're eating red meat, I wouldn't touch it unless it was organic grass fed because of all the hormones and all the antibiotics and all of the E. coli and the crap, the way that the factory farms are managed, it's terrible for the environment and we just bad. So
we do buy our beef from a local farmer. So we have made that change.
And by the way, you don't need it all the time. I eat beef like once every 2 weeks. And if I want it more than that, I eat it once a week. I have like a grass-fed burger. And that's it. It's expensive, but you're not eating meat every night. You don't need that much meat. Your body doesn't need that much meat. So now let's talk about fruits and vegetables. Anything with thick skin, again, in a perfect world, if you could go organic everything and you had, you know, your walls were lined with gold, that'd be wonderful. If you can't, then we go back to thick-skinned options. So instead of things like apples or berries, you're going to go with things like melon or citrus.
Okay.
Because the idea here is that anything with thick skin is going to absorb less pesticides. Anything with thin skin is going to have more pesticides. So if you're going to buy those thin-skinned fruits and vegetables, make sure they're organic. If you cannot afford them, then you go with thick-skinned options like the ones I just mentioned. Mm-hmm. And another thing, when it comes to vegetables, there are certain vegetables like broccoli that insects don't like. So you can go online and say which vegetables have the least pesticides on them. Broccoli is one of them. So broccoli is sprayed significantly less than something like a tomato. Tomatoes are going to be heavily sprayed. So you would buy things like broccoli over things like tomatoes or spinach because broccoli is going to have less pesticides. The things that are thin-skinned, also vegetables, you want to go organic. Now, dairy. I wouldn't touch it unless it's organic. It's loaded. Same thing. Hormones, antibiotics. Wouldn't touch it unless it's organic. But the good news for you is there's coconut milk. There's almond milk. There's hemp milk. I would avoid soy milk at all costs. So I would stay away from the soy because it's genetically modified and it's heavily sprayed. So I wouldn't go with dairy unless it was organic, but you could go with those other options, which are going to be cheaper and they don't need to be organic, especially coconut. Almond milk does. Almonds are sprayed. Coconuts are not. So I would choose coconut over almond in that case. But again, both are viable options.
Do you buy coconut milk in the dairy section or is that in the...
It is in the dairy section. It will be in the dairy section, yes.
In the cooler. It'll be in the cooler.
Exactly. Yeah, not the one in the can, the one in the carton.
Okay.
Another thing. Okay, now with eggs. In a perfect world, you'd be doing, you know, cage-free, blah, blah, blah. But the truth of the matter is there's not going to be hormones in the eggs and the chickens might not have eaten organic feed and the chickens' feed might have been sprayed and the chickens, I'm sure, have been eating antibiotics. But with eggs, if you can't go organic on them, it's significantly less serious than a non-organic apple or corn-fed non-organic beef. Okay? So eggs, you know, if you can't stretch your dollar there, that's okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Grains, with your grains, you just want to make sure that they're whole grains. So it can say wheat, but it needs to say, it can say multigrain, but that means nothing. It needs to say whole grain, which means that it hasn't been stripped of the fiber. So you want to look for words like enriched. When you see words like enriched, put it back on the shelf. And you want to make sure it says whole grain. So when you buy your grains, whether it's a pasta and you want like brown rice pasta, quinoa pasta, whole grain breads, you want brown rice, you want quinoa grains, things like that. Whole grains are going to be much better options.
Okay.
You can also substitute a lot of those meat proteins for bean dishes. I know that sounds weird, but like I said, I make this winter vegetable couscous that's awesome, and I make this black bean chili that's awesome. And I put a little organic non-fat yogurt on top of it, like sour cream, and it's really, really good.
That so sounds great.
Yeah, those areas.
Yeah, that sounds great. What about my damn porridge?
Who eats that? You don't really eat that. You're just being, please don't.
Well, Sherry's
in the winter.
Yeah, all right, whatever.
You don't really eat porridge. First of all, porridge.
Sherry's liking everything you're making, and nobody's saying anything about my damn porridge.
Oh, I'm saying something about it. Yeah. That's disgusting.
Porridge really doesn't sound appetizing.
No, it doesn't.
Then you just chat away then.
Well, anyway.
Sorry, Janice.
Gosh, but don't apologize. She's a weirdo. She needs to know it.
I've been listening. I know how she is. He's good.
Yeah. I've got your back, Janice.
What are you, Jake?
I owe her one. I like your porridge.
No, you don't. No,
with
you
that
don't.
Flour, Bruce.
Okay. So Jake's dad. I started calling him Bruce. Paul.
Yes, I know. I don't know what his name is.
And then I started calling Jake, son of Bruce Paul. But Jake's name is really Jake.
Okay.
Yeah.
Jake, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too.
But it's also just son of Bruce Paul, though. He's son of Bruce Paul.
Of Bruce
you
Paul,
could just call
it.
Janice weirdo. And you could call me.
Okay, and you were on your end.
Your Highness.
Yeah, and okay, you can continue on your famous couscous with your.
No,
ahead.
You get my point. But does that make sense, buddy? It's like of where to price. And by the way, you can buy in bulk, you can buy frozen, you can go to your favorite websites for your healthy, like Horizon. I bet if you went to the Horizon website right now, there'd be coupons for all their products.
Oh, that's great.
Or your favorite, you know, Ezekiel. Why eat these Ezekiel English muffins? I bet if I went on their website, there'd be coupons. There's a lot of times if you go to these companies' websites, there's coupons, specials, buy in bulk, buy frozen, go to the farmer's market, join a community-supported agriculture group. There's a lot of ways to really stretch that dollar.
And I think the frozen will help with access, where if I have to drive a distance to be able to get the organic varieties, then if I can freeze it when I get home, we'll have it for some time. So I think that's a great alternative.
And if you buy it frozen, there are even some studies that suggest frozen can be healthier, because instead of the fruit or vegetable oxidizing and losing its nutrients, it's frozen into the fruit or vegetable. So don't be afraid of that.
Great. Well, thank you so much for educating me here. I kept thinking, how do I find a class on this? And all of a sudden, now I had the opportunity to send you a question. So
thank you so much. It's my pleasure.
The podcasts are really entertaining for me to listen to as I'm driving, and very informative, and they've really helped crystallize things I needed to hear. So thank you, Jillian, for that.
She said, thank you, Jillian. Well, it's my pleasure.
You know what?
Have a great day.
You too.
Bye.
Bye, Sherry.
Right, see, because your advice is worthless. Don't say goodbye to her.
And to Bruce, son of Bruce Paul.
Goodbye.
All right. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Huh? What about that?
Well, she was very sweet. She was very
sweet. She was.
Yeah, but
porridge. That's disgusting. Now what?
Now... God, you're incorrigible.
I was just saying, let's just moving right along.
Well, now you have to say, and thank you, and good night, everyone.
Oh, I feel like all you ever do is be a buzzkill.
Ending. Gotta hurry up because I need my porridge. Okay. Toot, toot, diddly doot. Bye bye now.
You're waving goodbye?
Bye bye.
Can't see you waving goodbye. Well, why are you waving goodbye?
Because I want you to hurry up and say goodbye.
Okay. Janice has to go get her porridge. I'm so sorry you guys have to hear these things.
Yeah, that's right.
Until next time. Buh. Buh, buh, buh. Bye-bye. Have I got a little story?
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schleichinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.